Okay, and we're good. Okay. So I just have to use that for, I don't know, fixing the audio later on.
Clap.
Yeah. Clap. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Okay.
Yep. Don't do that.
You. All right. So welcome back to the Autism Podcast. If you can't tell, we do have guests. Mitch, how long do you say we've known these guests for?
Well, I'm about 30, so close. I've known them for about 30 years.
No way. Yeah. I've known them for my whole life.
Yeah.
Okay, so our guests today are our parents, Jason and Ginger Sleep. Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Thanks for letting us retrofit your entire cabin here in Montana. To retrofit it to our studio. We have three cameras. If you haven't seen already, you can see us on YouTube. I exploded this giant party popper almost right in Mitch's face. So if you want to see that, you can check out our last episode. But today's a good one. We really wanted to do what we can to appeal to kind of the parents' background, just kind of give Mitch's background ever since he was, you know, not 260 pounds, 6'4", and a little bit earlier on in his life. So. Yeah. We're going to go through kind of the story, you know, what it was like when Mitch grew up, how he was parented, kind of the discovery of what it was like to have a kid on the spectrum and just kind of how that all went about. But first, I want to do some intros, get your guys' background, how long you've known us. Go ahead, Mom, you can start.
Okay. Well, I've known you your whole life, so which is great, like 26, 30 years. So awesome years. My background... parent first, wife. Well, I say wife first because I had to marry this handsome guy first. Then, you know, having a baby, and with Mitch, our firstborn, but going to school and education, always had a desire to be a teacher. Then I wanted to be an administrator and always had family first and just blessed to be alive. So, mm-hmm. You want more?
No, that is good. Dad?
Yeah, I've known you your whole life too. So ditto on that. We got married early, so that's we've now known nothing but being parents, it seems like, right? Since we've been together. And went to Chatham State, went to school, played football, and got an education degree, and then just had babies in college. So, mm-hmm. So it was kind of a new experience having kids in college, where some of my friends, our friends and teammates had no idea what we were doing, and we had no clue either.
So. Right. So I want to stress a little bit more of your professional background as well. So Mom, what's your current occupation?
I'm a special services director. So in charge of special education, section 504s in our district.
Okay. And then Dad?
I'm the assistant superintendent at Park County School District number 1, the same district that Ginger's in.
And you've been principal. You were a principal in middle school for how long?
It's principal for 18 years.
Okay. And
prior to that, athletic director. Prior to that, teacher for 7 years.
Okay. And then Mom, what did you do before you were special education director?
I was a principal at Southside Elementary School in Powell.
Southside Giants.
And then prior to that, I was a principal, special ed director in Basin, which was Bighorn 4 in Wyoming. And prior to that, I was a Title I teacher, then special ed teacher also at the high school level, the middle school level, and elementary. So I did all.
Okay. So it's no secret that you guys have been around kids the majority of your career, both at home and at work.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
And then, they were all, both states that you were in Wyoming, right?
Wyoming, Kansas.
Kansas.
Wyoming and Kansas.
Yep. Right.
All right. Sweet. Well, I think what we first want to start off with is, you know, what did your life look like when you had your first child? Because that was Mitch. So what was your background? How old were you? Were you guys married yet? What was your plan for your first kid? Kind of dive into that. And then if you want, I'll tell you the next subject, if you want to just kind of weave that in, is, you know, what was it like getting the first diagnosis? I want to start even more a little bit back on, you know, what made you first think that you wanted to get Mitch checked out by someone? What were some, you know, pattern recognition? You're like, okay, this is a little bit different than what's considered maybe normal. Sure. And then that whole process up to diagnosis.
You want me to start?
Sure.
I think we were super young. So being 20 years old, when I had Mitch, Ginger was 18, and no, we were not married. So we were kind of the story you hear about in schools. We're teen parents, and it sometimes happens. And one thing I think that's important even to say, and maybe this is early, but some people write you off if you're a teen parent. Mm-hmm. And we weren't going to be written off. So we had each other. And I think the thing that kept us together for Mitch and actually all of our kids was our faith. But we just knew that we could do it if we did it together.
Right. Definitely.
Was it scary at first? As soon as mom got pregnant, what was that feeling like?
I don't think I can say if we're actually on air. But, I was scared to death.
Oh.
You don't ever know if you're ready because you don't have any experience to, you know, say that, you know, you've gone down this road, you can pull it off. So,
mm-hmm.
So it was all brand new. Everything was scary.
Yeah. Did your parents support you when they found out the news?
Absolutely.
Hey.
Out of the gate. Yeah, that's a big part of it, I think, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were, you know, shocked and surprised, I think, too. I was still in high school at the time, so it was, you know, difficult to kind of navigate those waters. But also, I knew we wanted to have a child, too. So it was really important for us to, it was a little early in the plan. We weren't even engaged yet, but we had been dating for a while, so we knew each other and kind of understood each other and our likes and dislikes. And
how long were you guys dating for? I actually don't even know this.
You don't know this?
No.
Let's say we dated when I was a junior and senior. And so it would have been actually my sophomore year. So, because you were a senior. I was younger. He was on the football team.
He was the stud football player.
He was a stud football player.
And you were on the basketball team.
I was on the basketball team.
Yeah, yep. You were a stud basketball player as well.
Well,
she was.
Tried harder. Tried real hard. Had great coaches.
Yeah.
She was hot. I met her first time at a dance.
Yeah, I was a sophomore.
Oh, that's what it was. Oh, I thought you were the stats person.
I was the stats person my sophomore year, and he was a senior. So we dated probably the end of my sophomore year, and then he went to college, and then we dated on and off from there. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then you figured out you were pregnant.
Yes.
So then how much did your life change then?
Quite a bit.
What was your plan? You were going to go to college and play sports, right?
Right. Well, yeah, definitely play sports. It was the middle of my senior year. So basketball had just started, which that was my fall sport. Winter sport was basketball. I didn't play anything else. And, you know, I didn't do volleyball. So that was my sport. And we were seniors and we were planning on working towards that state championship. That was the ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm.
Senior track season, I wasn't sure if I was going to run track or do basketball. So that kind of definitely changed. I had to talk to my team and my coaches and talk to my family about what was going on. And then I actually played for a little bit after I found out I was pregnant and decided that it was just too much of a risk. And so
yeah.
Mm-hmm. I said, no, I care too much about this baby that I'm not going to risk it. So step back.
So you got all the way up to the point to where you understood truly, and you had to the extent where you had to cut other things out of your life to where you were like, you know, I can't do the other things. I have to, shift my focus onto something else, which is being a parent.
Right.
Okay. Right. So I want to fast forward a little bit then up to, you know, as soon as Mitch is born, things are great.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mitch was a pretty small baby, so you can't get.
He wasn't the biggest,
yeah,
for
that's
sure.
Right.
He's 6'14", a little bit early, but not significant. So,
okay.
Born in June.
It was a perfectly healthy pregnancy, correct?
Great pregnancy, no delivery, issues.
Yeah. Nothing.
No delivery issues.
There's also no indication early, like early on indications that someone could be on the spectrum or have any kind of disorder that
right.
could be related to autism, right?
Right.
No.
So not up at that time. Point, up until he was born, he was quote unquote completely normal. Everything mm-hmm. was fine.
Yeah.
Right.
High right. percentile physically. I mean,
yeah. Okay. He weighed all,
top 5% just about everything.
Yep. Wow,
exceeded
look at you.
The charts. Yeah.
Could you
yeah.
go?
Oh, jeez. I have no control over this. So, when you have did. A bunch of doctors around you, you can.
he ate it. A lot. Yeah. Like, it was over the 100th percentile in weight and height. And he did, yeah, he did really well. Had some ear infections.
Okay.
So,
is that normal for?
Not really normal, but he did, it does happen. So he had quite a few ear infections growing up. But basically we had him in June and we went to college in August. So it might've even been the last part of July because Jason had football. And so here we are, new parents bringing a young baby onto campus into married housing. Your dad was playing football. And so we were just trying to navigate that world too and hadn't really had some of the medical kind of needs. He didn't have a lot other than that ear infections.
So. Okay. So then from that super early on, so basically just post-delivery, when did you start to notice some things? What was the origin story of understanding that Mitch might be a little bit different? And then what were the escalation tactics that you took? You know, did you go to a doctor? Did you know anything about autism? Maybe we start there.
I didn't know anything about autism. I had started in educational classes. Jason started, I think, the year after that with some classes. But I had a professor, Dr. Morgan.
Shout out Dr. Morgan.
Yeah, Dr. Morgan. he was awesome. So anyway, I started in elementary education classes, took some special ed classes, some behavioral classes. And so I
was... This was just part of your curriculum of your...
Yeah,
major
undergrad school. Okay. And he was like, hey, maybe you should go into special ed. So I started going into special ed and went into the behavioral class. And I said, I think I have a strong-willed child. So because I was telling him about Mitch saying, you know what? He throws tantrums. He wants his way.
What age was Mitch?
So he would have been probably between 18 and 24 months old by that time. And so I knew there was something going on behaviorally, but I was like, I've never been a parent before. We hadn't been parents before. So we're like, maybe we just have a strong-willed child. So we did read some books, Dr. Dobson's book, Strong-Willed Child. We're like, well, we're going to read this book. We're going to do some practices. And then Dr. Morgan would basically talk to me after class and certain things. And we would do scenarios and say, hey, this is what Mitch is going through right now. He'd be like, why don't you try this? And so your dad and I would come back and say, okay, let's try this approach to try to extinguish basically a behavior. We want him to stop throwing tantrums, but we want him to tell us what he needs. And so, but we had lots of tantrums.
I think come on, Mitch.
I don't remember any of this, so you can't blame me. And also, I was the test baby, so I was giving, I was helping you get extra credit with your teacher. So,
well, that might be true. Yeah. Yeah. No, you didn't. We didn't get any extra credit. I just felt bad because we wanted to be able to help you, and we were just trying to figure out what was going on behaviorally with him at different times, and if there was other needs that were unmet and what could we do to help support him. So,
because at that time you were just treating symptoms essentially, right? Mm-hmm. You had no idea what else. It was just, whatever you saw was wrong is what you were trying to fix.
And we were looking for developmental milestones. Like I had mentioned that he had ear infections. So Dr. McLean, you know, would check for different things with him at those different appointments. But I think, you know, there wasn't anything that was glaring that was like, whoa, he has autism. I really hadn't even heard of the word autism.
Yeah. Because this was back when...
This was the 90s, like early 90s. I might have read something in some of my classes, but it didn't, you know, red flag to me to say, oh, this is maybe Mitch has autism. So,
yeah, it's... And I think one of the things that got me thinking that there wasn't something right is some of our friends who did have kids. Their kids were hitting certain milestones where Mitch wasn't. And I think that was kind of our first clue. And with, you know, with Ginger working with Dr. Morgan and everything, it's, we knew something was building. We just knew something wasn't there because the only thing we had to compare against those other kids, it wasn't working out.
Got it. That might, okay. So that was kind of the first indication beyond just Mitch being a little angry. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So, okay. So I get that, the context, you're kind of gathering that. And then what age was Mitch as soon as you saw, you know, you saw so much context, other kids' behavior, his behavior, and you're like, you know what? I think we need to take one more step forward in our, maybe in our self-imposed research and bring this to a professional that really understands this mm-hmm. thing.
Well, I think some parts of that maybe was we were trying to survive as parents. So we didn't maybe see some of those indications because it was basically like Jason had said earlier, there wasn't anyone around us that had kids. Like we were the only parents.
Oh, right.
So we didn't have a lot of play. Yeah. We didn't
early college.
Yeah. We didn't have any like friends our age that had kids that were in college. So we didn't have a lot of play dates. It was usually we were shifting schedules. So he would have a class, I would have a class, and we would run back and forth to keep that support for Mitch. So he would have, you know, always somebody that was caring about him and knew him. So I don't think we knew it was such a contrast until probably 4 years old. He'd started, we had to both go into our practicums and teaching. And so he was at daycare and then we saw a little more things. So his daycare provider was like, yeah, he's throwing some more fits or he's trying to get some things across or he only eats a certain food. He only wants this certain food. He won't touch anything else. So then we were kind of inquiring about that, but we also knew, having your brother actually, and his girlfriend at the time, not was Kim, his wife, and my sister-in-law too. So she had recommended when we move from Chadron to Kansas, that we go to this child development center and they would screen him. And that's actually the very start of our journey is Mitch went to this screening, and they ran all of these different developmental tests and speech and language and fine motor and gross motor. And he qualified for a program when he was 4 years old. And it was an all-day program in Kansas in Garden City. And so he got to go every day to receive a plethora of services. And that was his first time on an IFSP, which is an individualized family service plan. So he wasn't quite school-aged. So it was a preschool for students. And so when Mitch started in that, there was other students that had disabilities or struggles with learning and language. And so we knew that he wasn't alone either. So that made us feel really good. One of our good friends, also that center was based out of his office was there too. So we felt really comfortable that Max was in the same area, Max and Elisa.
Yeah, I remember this guy.
That Max was right there too. And Max knew Mitch and so did Elisa. So.
Okay. So how old was Mitch as soon as he qualified for what maybe simplified or when referring to is just like a special, was it special needs at that time?
Yeah, it was like a special needs preschool. Okay. And it was a developmental delay. It's kind of with primary speech.
So how old was he then?
Four.
Okay.
He was four.
And I think that was one of the first times too, that we thought as parents that we weren't alone. You know, we talked about that a little bit earlier, but that, you know, we didn't know how to help, but having a different group of parents that had different struggles with their own kids knew they could find some solace that there's somebody out there that has specialized training that can work with your son or daughter. That was huge.
Okay. So from 2 to 4, for Mitch's age, right. you were kind of alone and all you really had or to work with is that Mitch was different than other people,
right?
Or his age.
Right.
So, okay.
And then when he was four, when we moved to Kansas, Miss Jeannie was his teacher. Do you remember when you sent Miss Jeannie your graduation announcement? Do you remember that? She wrote you a card back?
Well, you made me write a lot of graduation announcements, so.
Oh, hey, yeah. I have another comment. Now that you just coincidentally brought this up. If there's anyone that watched this that didn't get my graduation, thank you.
I found
my mom never sent them out, and I wrote every single one of them.
I'm really sorry about that, Vince. They got tucked away.
It's okay.
Anyway, so Miss Jeannie was basically our first introduction. And that was the first time, too, that we were like, okay.
What was her title? What did she do?
Teacher.
She was just a teacher.
Special ed teacher.
Okay.
Yep. And so Miss Jeannie was basically the first one that broke the news to us, like, okay, your child definitely has some needs that we can address. You're going to have to agree to these services. He started with speech and language and occupational therapy, physical therapy, just some behavioral kind of things. And so that was kind of the first time we knew that, like, it's official because you're filling out this official document.
Yeah.
And saying that you agree to them providing these services and you're entrusting them with your child and what their needs are.
I would say, though, it wasn't, the IEP was in place, but it.
What does IEP stand for?
Individual Education Plan.
Okay.
It's under the, kind of the special ed heading. So, but it was not titled like Asperger's or
right.
autism. They were working with Mitch to do kind of the symptoms of autism.
Right.
Nothing at autism. So it changed because we didn't know what was causing it. What was the focal point?
Yeah, we thought it could have been our parenting. It could have been we're not doing enough. We're doing too much. And so we needed those experts to kind of help us understand and how to navigate what his current needs were from their experience. So that's that plan that we developed together. And it was critical. They call it early intervention. And that's something that we stress a lot as professionals is get your child the services they need as soon as possible. I don't know. Maybe if we would have intervened earlier, that we could have had some different successes earlier on. But at time, we always said it's God's timing for everything. And one of the reasons we think we were led to Garden City was to get Mitch the services that he needs. So.
Okay. Now, I want you to walk me through what that was like from, because what I'm imagining right now and what I really want this episode to be for is for those potential parents out there that might be dealing, you know, maybe they have some suspicions, maybe they already have the diagnosis from their kid. What was it like when you took the transition period from 2 to 4 years where you had this suspicion that something might have been different mm-hmm. to actually having someone tell you, hey, in fact, Mitch does have some sort of, I don't know if you call it disabilities, but I guess just some things that are going to inhibit him more so than other people. What was your first reaction to that?
So this is more when later elementary years.
Or is you wanting like a 4?
Are you doing the 2 to 3? Is that what you're asking?
No. So as soon as you basically went to whenever Mitch was eligible for this,
right.
this so program, which
special needs preschool, we'll call it.
Like yeah. That. Which well, maybe this is a good question. Was that the first kind of shock to you? Like, oh, our kids has special needs.
For me, yes.
It was.
Mm. I cried.
Definitely. Really?
Both of us. Yeah.
Yep. I cried.
Don't cry.
Oh, Mitch, we're supposed to have you give a disclaimer at the beginning of this episode that there would be tear shed.
Oh, yeah.
So go ahead and just throw that in
yeah,
right
Mitch,
now.
Would you help me out?
Okay. Almost everybody in the room will cry except me because I'm on some pretty strong antidepressants. So.
Perfect.
Don't worry. That means they're working, so.
Thank you, Mitch.
So and we were talked about this a little bit. Is it because, you know, you have this idea in your mind of the life that your kid is going to be able to live and have. And then, you know, as soon as they tell you something like that, everything changes.
Yeah, it resets because you have dreams for your kids. Oh. But I think initially, and I don't know if any parents out there would have the same response, but it checked our priorities for our kids. Because then you kind of go into a mode once you kind of get a diagnosis of your kid is not whatever normal is, that you're going to have to change a lot of your expectations for the kids, which I think is good. It's mm-hmm. it's good for parents anyway. But
even if they don't have a disability.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that was, I think for us as parents, that was our wake-up call that we needed to change our pitch to to meet our kids' swing. So once we did that, not only did it help Mitch, it helped you and it helped Tori, because all three of you are different. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if you have a disability or not. But parents that miss that, they miss a lot.
Yeah.
Especially with autistic kids, because they're missing value because they're not looking for it.
Right.
Once you start looking for it, you start to think, hey. Yeah.
Okay.
That's where I get choked up.
Yeah.
That's made all the difference in our family.
Yeah.
Wow. What a way to reposition the way that you planned on really helping your kid, is it makes you just reverse engineer everything to what meets your kid first and what's going to help them.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And do you want to add to that?
I think sometimes parents, when you first hear that, you're like, what did I do wrong? Because you want what's best for your kid, and you think that maybe you did something to cause this, and you're like, did I do something wrong? So you kind of rehash every event up until that point, and did I do something? And then when you can get beyond that, like, you know what, nothing you could have done made this happen. Mm-hmm. If you can just close that chapter and start a new one, and say, you know what, I still have dreams, and we're just going to have to take it one step at a time. But my dreams are not my dreams. They're Mitch's dreams. And how do I help him get to where he needs to be?
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's really cool. That's really, really cool.
And we had to do it together, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it was your strengths and, you know, like Jason said, our faith in each other. And then also balancing, too, because by that time you were born, Vince. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at this time we find, you know, Mitch needs to have services and support that are specialized. You were born, you know, we had different things that we wanted to help support you in. So we were just trying to figure out, how do you navigate that? And then, you know, 22 months later, then Tori comes too. And so how do we keep our focus on individual needs, not what we want as parents, but what do you need? And then how do we help deliver?
Yeah. So that's actually my next question is, as soon as your new reality is kind of realized in that moment, or, you know, that those series of years between maybe when he fits a certain criteria to be eligible for a program, special education, to, you know, you said 7 years old, which mm-hmm. is another kind of big transition. Maybe when you go to school?
Six.
Okay.
Okay.
So between that period of time, you must have some sort of mental shift where you're like, okay, this is our new reality. This is our kid. And now we need to decide what kind of life we want to be able to give him. What is your next step? Because we talked about research. Because, right. You know, if I were to learn something about someone who is really close to me, I mean, I have no sort of empathy or capacity to realize what it might be like to have a kid. But if I was very interested in something, my very first reaction would just be pull out my phone or my iPad, and I could just research everything. Mm-hmm. I could see top 10 symptoms. I could see blogs about it. I could see YouTube videos about it. What was your guys's, how did you guys go and find that information?
And like this being the 90s, how much was autism a thing back during that time? Was it as talked as much about, or was it just kind of still an unknown compared to today?
I definitely don't think that there was as many, that there wasn't as much attention on autism. It was more probably on the social language kind of piece. So I noticed more social language. I think I early on looked at apraxia. I thought there was something with Mitch with apraxia, again, through
what is my apraxia? Class.
So a delay or apraxic is sometimes there's some type of an event that happens, an event such as a stroke in utero, a stroke at birth, or something that's causing the language to be affected, and you're not able to produce the language appropriately, or it could get stuck. kind of too in spots. So I did some research in the library. We love the college library. We spent a lot of time there. We had to
reserve real life spots. Books, huh?
Yeah, we read
books. You looked at real books.
And real journal articles, like magazines. They had microfiche. Articles and a microfiche. Oh. Yeah, we had to do that. So lots of reading, textbooks, books, research articles, trying to figure out how we could best support Mitch. And then just, you know, trusted colleagues too. By that time, we were both in a system where in Kansas, where they would allow us to learn about that. And you would be surrounded by more, because the population was greater, more professionals.
Mm. Yeah. And the funny thing is this time, sorry.
Go ahead.
At this time is the dawn of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have access. There might have been more information out there on autism, but we didn't have the access that you do today.
Yeah.
So we could do some surfing, but there wasn't a lot of content out there.
Oh, yeah.
But, and we, so we tried to look at as much as we could. We tried to learn as much as we could. But again, we were just, we were reacting to what Mitch's needs were, what deficits he might have. Again, not the origin, because we still weren't to that point where we knew what this is.
Oh.
There were professionals that were guessing and educated guesses.
So you were researching by symptoms.
Symptoms.
Right. Wow.
Like anxiety. And when he would throw a fit, there was behavior, social language, things like that.
Attention. Attentional
issues. Yeah. So those were all, spokes off a hub, but we didn't know what the hub was. So we were still, in the dark a little bit. Right. I was.
Right. And or people were, you know, just they didn't want to put their finger on it and say that's autism, because I don't know if they knew for sure, if they could be confident in that this is autism. But he did have the services that were addressing the symptoms or his needs specific. And we had a lot of great professionals in every district we went to, and we can't thank them enough for really focusing on Mitch's needs and say, let's try this. You know, I've done my own research and I would like to propose this type of a program with Mitch. I would like to do these goals with Mitch. And so we would be like, yes, let's do that.
Okay. Now I want to caveat with what your home life was like, what your circumstances were, because I don't know, if I put myself in your guys' shoes right now, and if you were to be faced with an issue like this, you guys, you both have your master's degree, dad, you have your specialist, you know, you've done a whole lot of investment into your career and your life, you made investments in real estate, all these things. So if you were to be faced with a challenge, often the first mechanism that you can use to supplement the kind of the hardships of those is, you know, if you had some sort of financial backing to fuel all of these, you know, these research tactics, you can go out, buy a computer, you can go reach out to this specialist, no problem. You can like cut checks to whoever can help you the most. But what was your reality at that time? And I'll say, I know what I do know about it so far is you guys, how old were you guys still here? You guys are 23, mom. You were 23, dad, you were 24.
Yeah. Yeah, 22.
Still going to school.
With or
were
Mitch?
You, were you out of school?
I just graduated.
Okay, so you just graduated. Throughout college, I know that there's some food stamps that we lived on for a while. Right. What was the...
We were very poor.
Yeah, very little resources in college, especially. But even when I got my first job and we moved to Kansas and I had a salary, our family still would have qualified for food stamps. Mm-hmm. So it was a tough road to hoe, because we had all three kids then too. So we're trying to raise our kids on a small salary and working extra jobs, trying to get everything we could to bring home for the family, to support everybody. Again, Mitch's help. The school district provides a lot of that for free, but we still had to live and making ends meet. It was month to month. I mean, getting if a car went down, we would have been in dire straits.
Oh. You guys weren't comfortable enough to also not make raising Mitch while you're this young a full-time job, because you still had to go to school and you had to make money for our family.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And yeah, it wasn't until later that you know, when they're older and you have more supports at the school and you feel a little more competent as a parent, that you can, I think, start to better yourself for your family. But you got to go through hell sometimes just to get to the point where you can look at your kids and say, I'm going to do better now. Cause you got to figure out what all the problems are. And we just still didn't have all the problems figured out.
Did you guys feel poor at the time? Or you just like, you would go to church and then everyone would give you like plates of lasagna. And then you were like, oh yeah, maybe people do know we're kind of poor.
We did get invited over.
I don't know if I felt poor.
I don't know.
We didn't have money. Yeah. We had everything we needed for our family.
Yeah.
You never thought there was a moment like, hey, we do not have the amount of resources or support that we need. You just were convinced that you would make it work.
Yeah. There's no other way. Yeah.
No other
way.
To tell you the truth, like, you didn't, like, I don't know if this was strategic or not, but you never made us aware of the social status of what we were in right now. Like, having less money than others. So that didn't carry over to us. We certainly just made it a place of love and caring. It seemed to like, so that definitely great job on that.
Whew, nice. That's what we were shooting for.
Yeah. I didn't feel anything like, oh, I'm like, my family's different from others. It was just a family at that point. Right. That's how I felt.
Yeah, maybe there's a lesson in that. Because, I would attest to the same thing. I never felt that we were below anything. You know, I know that, you know, I don't know. I didn't even compare, like, how many toys we got to other people. Because I feel like you still took us. You made things. Ooh, this is a good lesson. You made things feel special.
Yeah.
You couldn't just kind of, throw as many things at us as you could. You know, like either opportunities or just material things so that we could just kind of like, you know, just absorb that. Yes. You know, we're doing really good in life. Like, my parents doing good. And then I get fun things like toys and, you know, the best food or whatever, but you always made things feel special. So then that maxed out our understanding of you know, how much we could be given.
Right. I think we tried to just do experiences too. I mean, we figured out
consciously.
Yeah. Conscious experiences that were little to no cost. So even though,
do you have an example or two?
Yeah, Mitch would, you know, it wasn't great to have to go to the parks, but we would figure out certain parks that were better for him. Like, he could motor-wise do things. There would be less kids asking him questions and him not being able to know how to respond, or it would be a safe place for us to try things out and say, okay, why don't you go over and get on the seesaw or ask them if they want to do that with you. And so we would just find different things, museums that were free, or there was free days at different things, go by the river, go to a farm, just different things.
Go to a zoo.
Go camping. But just kind of pushing the boundaries, I think, too, so that we wouldn't just stay at home. We were like, this is going to be a tough kind of experience. This is unknown to Mitch, but we're going to have to figure out, our family still has to do things together. It's that important. We wanted to have experiences that were shared.
We read quite a few Christian books at that point, like John Trent and Gary Smalley put so much value in memories.
Yeah.
And I think that's what shifted gears for me. Ginger was already there. Yeah. And your mom is what made a lot of this special. So I give her all the credit in the world, because I didn't have a lot of those memories, but
yeah,
she always wanted to make everything special for you guys.
Yeah. And also, like, going briefly, I think that was just a great idea, just introducing me to all those environments, just more stimulus, like, you know, like, sometimes it's like, these are certain environments that Mitch is probably going to be in, so he needs to experience it, even though if it's an uncomfortable experience, we'll know that better. And it's a great thing that you did that. I think that's wonderful.
And we talked about that. It's no accident that you took Mitch to all of these things. It's not like you wanted to go to them, or, you know, other kids wanted to go to them in your family. You went to these things. You reverse engineered what you wanted Mitch to be able to do in life.
Right.
And so you forced him into these situations, whether he was crying or not.
Yeah.
And you just said, hey, listen, this is what your real life is going to look like. And as a parent, I'm going to do everything I possibly can, even if it's super, super uncomfortable, to force you into a way to where you can start to navigate them yourselves.
Right. I definitely think there was times that he had no choice at all. Your dad was working as an athletic director and as a coach, so he worked very long hours trying to learn, you know, how to support different coaches and things. So you went to a lot of basketball games and wrestling matches, and there was a lot of noise, but we just didn't give Mitch the option of not coming. You are coming. We're going as a family. Mm-hmm. This is something. So Mitch was basically adopted by so many different football players, whether your dad was in college, all the different athletes there, or high school athletes. And so your dad worked really hard to provide for us, and I'm so grateful to him for never giving up to make sure we always had what we needed. So
I wanted to point out two of those angles that you just offered. And it was, one is the first one, which is where, you know, you consciously go out of your way to think about situations you can put Mitch in to where he can take away some lessons or just get him better accustomed to an environment. So there's that side of the coin. And then the other one is, hey, listen, I still have a life. Like, I need to go to practice. I need to go to games. I need to go to work. Like, yes, we need to go to the, yes, Mitch needs to be able to operate in a store, but also we need food. So we need it. I'm going to bring my kid because he can't stay at home. So I'm going to bring him to this store.
Right.
So it's a both of those, because I think there's two different tactics that, I mean, at least that I've seen. I know that, Mom, you've seen hundreds of different kids and cases and outcomes and parents. But there's two that I really wanted to address. And one is kind of the helicopter parent, the notorious helicopter parent, where they try to micromanage everything. And it's probably because it's positive intended. We talked about the pun and square of positive intention, negative intention, and outcomes related to those. And I think it's one of those things where their intent is positive. The parent wants the best thing for their kids. But it just so happens that being a helicopter parent, micromanaging everything, is going to yield a negative outcome for that kid. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other side of the coin for, you know, how to parent, which is super hands-off, just hoping the school system does it.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, those two different things. I just wanted to make sure that those points were out there.
Well, and I think to that point is, I believe, just in our experience, in my experience, every parent does the best they can for their kid. Nobody's taking a day off.
Yeah.
I think the other thing, what helped us is when even Mitch was going through probably elementary school, later in elementary school, and we were in the special ed process pretty deep, is our goal for him was to be independent. So everything, so taking him to the games, taking him to the stores, taking him to family parties and things like that, that was a dress rehearsal for life. And you don't get to see life unless you live it. Mm-hmm. And
because it would have been easier if you just left Mitch at home.
Absolutely.
Or like with someone else, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And as a parent, we learned real quick, you don't have any pride. Okay. You're doing it all for your kids and your family.
Yeah.
And as long as what kept us focused, kept us definitely focused, is we got to get him to the point where he can live on his own and have his own life, his own dream. Because there is, in our opinion, we knew that he could be what he wanted to be, but we just needed to keep getting him in different situations where he could see it for himself. And you don't do that by sheltering kids.
Yeah.
But.
Right. And I definitely think we had strict routines that we had to adhere to, too. So he could have some things that he could count on. Yeah, sorry about those strict routines.
Secondhand. I got secondhand. Super strict routines.
Yes, you do. Sorry about that.
They loosened up over time, though.
They did.
But I think that was something that Mitch could have, something that was known, was the routine. He could know that he could count on these things. But so if we introduced new factors, that he could be like, okay, this is different than the routine. And so I might react differently. I might be upset about this, or we would know this is out of our routine. So we're going to have to work that much harder for him to adjust, or we're going to have to adjust our style during that time. When these new factors or new experiences are introduced. So I don't think that you can micromanage anything. That's, I mean, I like to have control of things. I like things a certain way. I'm linear, sequential in nature, concrete, love that. But I think with autism and just being a parent, you have to be flexible. You have to be able to understand that there's people around you that are there to help you. But Mitch needs to have people that really care about him and that want a relationship. That's finding trust and finding an ability to communicate was really important for us, because that is what you need to do in life. Have manners, have high expectations for yourself and others, being kind. Those type of things are things we can encourage and support, but you cannot control that. He's amazing just the way he is. He has that genuine and authentic feeling to everything he does. And we just wanted him to be independent of us, but also know that people notice things too.
Okay. I want to explore kind of the tact or how you would position lessons for Mitch. But first, I wanted to point out something Dad said, which was, and this is because this is something I see so often, and it's parents who are embarrassed in public especially, is, you know, I don't know, I feel like their goals are aligned to making it so either they look like a really good parent or nothing's wrong with their kid. But as soon as you're able to forego that for the sake of, you know, Mitch's life or your kid's life, I think that that's really the sweet spot, because then everything just falls away. You don't care about, you know, if you bring him into a store and you're like, hey, this is a lesson my kid needs to learn, he's going to scream and yell. That's too bad. And I don't care about anybody, because I'm doing this not for myself, but for other kids. Right. It's an ironclad method to not care about what anyone has to think. And it's in the best intention for your kid. So I wanted to point that out. But
Mitch, do you have a story about that?
No, I'm just seeing Dad, just if I'm crying or screaming, I could just see Dad in his head just say, I'm doing this because I love you.
Yeah, there's some tried types. That's, and every parent,
yeah,
will deal with it.
Right.
If you don't let the pretense of that get in the way of raising your kid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there, don't get me wrong, I wanted to spank you till my hand hurt. But there were some times where that did happen.
Yep, I was the most disciplined child in the family.
Yep. You're welcome.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, Mitch, what's that?
I said, thank you for the discipline. Discipline's good. Don't shame it.
It is. Okay. So, by this time, you know, maybe we're at Mitch's 7-8 age point where, you know, you're actually taking him out, mm-hmm. into like introducing him to situations so he can learn his own lessons, those kinds of things. How did you approach, and now I'm just reading off my script here. I don't know how it got on here, but it says, how did you see that being different from your perfect child, Vince, and your daughter, Tori? Sorry, I'm just, I don't know who wrote this. But
script.
Wow.
So how did you position, how were those lessons that you taught Mitch different than maybe what your other kids was? And again, it says perfect child. I don't know what that means. Perfect child, Vince.
It's perfect child, Vince.
Hey, it's a free country. You can think whatever you want or read whatever you want.
It's on the script, though.
It's right there.
That's a shocker, by the way.
Oh, yes. Definitely.
How do you balance? You're asking, how do you balance three different kids?
Well, it's more of when I did something wrong, or when Mitch did something wrong, how was that different than when I did something wrong? How did you teach it than the lesson? Was there a difference?
Boy, that's a good question. There was a difference. I think you guys saw Mitch grow up, and you would talk to us about differences. We would talk to you about differences too. And I think when it came to discipline, or if you got into trouble, you might get in trouble for something Mitch wouldn't.
Mm.
But what I was always grateful for both you and Tori, is you understood that. You knew that there was there was things outside of his control. And you gave him grace, even when you were in trouble for the same behavior. And, you know, it wasn't fair. If you're looking at fair as equality across the board, it's not fair. But within a family and in a unit, every kid had expectations because we wanted the same for all of you. Independence, live your dreams, you know, whatever that is for you. And so we always parented as individuals. That would.
We definitely had expectations. You don't remember the chore list that was on the.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you know, I had to have the chores. Everybody had different responsibilities. And I think that we had high expectations for all of you. The expectations were similar in nature, very similar, almost probably the same in some cases, but the way that we explained to Mitch and the consequences for Mitch were maybe a little bit different, but we always did that private. I don't think you remember a lot of those times we made it private, because we felt like it was.
What was the point of that?
I think that when we did it privately too, is we could at least flesh out and find out if there was other causes for a behavior. Was there other parts of the story we didn't know about? And you can't really do that in a family setting.
It's like isolate the variables.
Right.
Okay.
Well, and it preserves dignity too.
Sure.
It's nobody likes a public flogging, and that's seems like dignity is lost. So it's better to just pull you out. Plus, I think you can express love and discipline better when you do it like that.
I think that definitely helped with me. Like when you did that younger, like earlier on when the discipline, I thought you disciplined me because you were mad at me just because I was being me, or I didn't realize the action that you were angry at the action that I took.
Right.
So I think that definitely helps when you explain why you're disciplining it to the child. You have to do that and still carry out the discipline.
Right? Oh, yeah. Explicitly delineate the person from them being mad or disciplining you as the individual to positioning it to where they're positioning the behavior that you elicited.
Yeah.
So like having those two is really what gave you an understanding of, okay, they aren't mad at me. I didn't, you know, I did something wrong, an action of mine, so I'm going to try to not do that action again.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what I also heard what you said is, you know, the difference between how you might discipline a quote-unquote normal person versus someone who might be on the spectrum, at least in our family, was you could more have a conversation with Tori and I, and we could better understand why something was wrong. Just because we could build a better story in our mind, perhaps. And then with Mitch, you just had to be super explicit with exactly what you didn't like and what they shouldn't try to do again. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of the difference?
Exactly the difference.
Mm.
Yeah. And it had nothing to do with intellect. It was access. Him being able to access what you were saying. He had a harder time receiving what was being said until you slowed it down and you really talked about the behavior. Where you guys, sometimes it was just natural that you knew what you did was wrong.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And where Mitch would fixate on certain things and go down a certain path, that fixation sometimes takes you down to different behaviors that aren't productive for him. And so we had to interrupt that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
I remember... You did used to you disciplined us all together if we got the whole thing. It was then, like, I think later on, you distinguished sometimes, if me and Vince got in trouble, normally one would just stand in front, one would get the spanking, the other one would wait, and then you would spank it, and we're both in it together. No, I just want to, so. You used to discipline us like in front of each other. Like you used to do that. But I think later on, I didn't really understand it until you explained stuff like separately. If we did do the same thing, you had one guy go to your room until I call you, then you disciplined him, and then you sent the other one down.
I want it to be known that it was almost always your fault when we got in trouble.
Oh, whatever.
And you know, it's actually a good point to bring this up. But when we got the diagnosis when he was a sixth grader, that's what changed. Because then we knew what the hub was. We knew kind of what the origins of the behaviors were. Mm-hmm. It helped me a ton because I was able to think through the lens of autism and not just, this is just raw behavior. I got to discipline through my kid. That helped me a ton. And I think that's where some of my regret was, is because it was just me, ignorance, trying to raise you the way I was raised, possibly both of you guys. But then after there was the official diagnosis, it was like, okay, now I have something I can sink my teeth in and say, this is it. This is why. And now I have to change. I have to make the way of disciplining, loving him, different, just memories. How do we maximize them for him? Because we know what it is now. And by that time, there was a lot more information that we could read and research and things like that. So that was part of our growth. And, you know, I think the spankings and the discipline probably went down because there was more understanding of where the behavior was coming from.
Okay.
You think?
I was also getting up there in age, so.
Yeah, just being like a stupid little kid, just like doing everything to piss your parents off. Yeah. Okay.
I think it did adjust around that time. I do believe that.
That's really interesting. I didn't know you didn't get the diagnosis until sixth grade. Mm-hmm. That was the kind of the concrete. They knew what it was. You just took him to, how did you take him, how did that happen?
We took him
to a doctor?
Yeah, Denver Children's Hospital.
What was the final straw? There had to be something that led up to you finally driving over there.
I think that there was probably some more articles. There was more information out by that time. Obviously, the internet was, you know. It was not dial-up anymore. And we had, again, some great educators, speech pathologists, special ed teachers that said, you know, Mrs. Renee said, I think that, you know, maybe we need to look at autism. You know, have you heard that before? And yep, we've heard of that. We know that at that time I was teaching special ed and I was like, okay. And I think it's really hard to see it in your own child too. Even Whoa. Being in education, you know, you are like, there's something that's a little off, but we have all of these people addressing his needs, but to actually put a name to it. Cause we thought maybe actually, I think Mrs. Renee thought, Asperger's syndrome.
Sorry, I want to rewind just real quick. Yep. I want to tailor to someone who maybe isn't, I mean, you were the principal at that school. Wait, right. In sixth grade.
No, he was actually Jason.
Principal of the middle school.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I'm just trying to tailor to the people who might not already be in the four walls of their school. So maybe, right. You know, did the teacher come to you at parent teacher conferences, or is this, how did Miss, right. Miss Renee?
Yeah, Mrs. Renee. It was at his IEP. At that time, he was in fifth grade in Manderson. He was going to be transitioning to sixth grade with his dad in Grable. And so we just started talking about his eligibility and said, you know, maybe we should really be looking at more than just a learning disability. Maybe we should be looking more than just a speech and language, you know, issue or occupational therapy need. So Mrs. Renee actually helped us start the process, and then Grable Middle School helped finish out that eligibility process. And we went through Denver Children's, filled out, I don't know, 50-page document on his developmental history, and went down there, and we thought it was Asperger's. But based on everything that we had through the appointment and through his profile, the doctor said, this is autism. This is autism. And yep. So
that's when he was on the spectrum.
Yeah, he's on the spectrum. So,
okay. Okay, cool. So I have a couple more points to bring out. I know we're coming up on an hour here. Did you guys realize that we've been here for an hour?
No.
Yeah, we have no clock in here, but it usually goes pretty quick. Okay.
It's like the teachers, like they say, we're tired of kids looking at the clock. So
you just took that out.
Took the clock out.
How did you know when Mitch would do something wrong or when he would get into a tough situation? when did you know when to intervene versus let him be independent and learn those lessons? Is it super? Was there a very fine line? Did you do it sometimes? And then you had to peel it back because, you know, you're like, oh, shoot, I shouldn't have done that. He should have learned that by himself. How did that discovery happen?
Well, I think we just tried to be as consistent as possible, and we had to build our own stamina. We had to discipline several times, again and again and again. I mean, because we were like, he didn't understand this part of the message. Maybe he couldn't isolate that issue. He didn't see it as one part of the problem. He just saw it as a big problem. And so we would have to kind of isolate.
What worked, what didn't? I think that'd be interesting.
Forgetting your kid in the corners probably didn't work.
We sometimes when we would get in trouble, we had a reflection period where we had to go into a corner on the wall. And Mitch just must have done something really wrong because you guys forgot about him, basically.
It was like afternoon, and then it was like night.
Yeah.
Mitch's forehead, he was like a little unicorn. He was just being wedged in between the two walls.
I think what didn't work is not us being on the same team. You know, I think we both had to agree on how we were going to parent all of you guys, is how we were going to address certain situations and issues. And I think we were pretty, again, talking about being strict. We just had to be, it wasn't so much strict as consistent. Like, our approach needed to be consistent. So I think consistency is something that's needed, even if it feels like you're banging your head against the wall, continuing to say the same things. That's what Mitch needed sometimes. He just was more receptive at different times. That's part of the language issue, is what he understood at times, even though he's extremely intelligent, his ability to respond to that was varied at times.
Yeah. It got better with age, just like you guys.
Yeah.
You know, we try to give you more latitude the older you got to run through your own experience to see if a mistake can be learned by you. If it's learned by you, it's better. It's always better.
Sure.
We wanted to get you to that point where you were just, you know, hey, that's wrong. I need to self-correct and then get into the right spot. It's just when it went so far, if you're to break it down by a discipline, if it was, you were missing the lesson, I think that's when any parent intervenes. Mm-hmm. But you got to let you guys fail too, just like we did when we grew up.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. One thing I want to touch on too is, before we get into the lovey-dovey fun stuff, is the what impacts do you guys feel on your guys' relationship? Because you guys had it basically as bad as it gets. I mean, pregnant at 18, no money, still trying to go to college, trying to play sports, trying to grow your career. So, I mean, your back was against the wall. But how did you feel that impacted you in a negative, positive, whatever way?
I think it impacted us just because we made an agreement when we got married. And at that time, you know, I had accepted the Lord. I didn't know the Lord up until that point anyway. And I never knew what commitment was. But when I made the promise to God, and then I made the promise to Ginger, and then we agreed that divorce would never be entertained in our house. Hmm. And so then that note that puts your back against the wall.
Yeah.
And the only person you got is who's right next to you. And I think that's what we weren't going to let anybody else solve our problems for us.
Yeah.
It wasn't easy sometimes. No. She was mean to me sometimes. But yeah, we worked through that too. Thanks. Okay, maybe I was wrong sometimes.
You were pretty strict, stern yourself.
I was.
Yeah. Stubborn sometimes. I think everybody's stubborn. Because I think we're just doing the best that you can. I think that was what kept us together too, is like, we're in this together, and we want you guys to have the best life possible. So we're not looking at other options, staying positive, working through things. I mean, it's a big strain, is, you know, working with, Yeah, I don't think there was an IEP that I didn't go to until probably Mitch was, maybe a sophomore, that I didn't cry at the IEP, because I was like, we're going to have new goals. We're going to have new struggles. We're going to have to listen at this parent-teacher conference or at this IEP meeting about all the things that Mitch is really struggling with. And you don't want to hear those things, but you also want to hear them so you know that you have an end goal in mind. Like, this is our new goal for this year. This is your goal before you're 21. This is your goal for when you're 18. And so I think that was hard. There was times too that Jason and I talked about me not working is like making it a full-time job is to, you know, be with Mitch. Cause there was really some rough patches, probably middle school, that I was like, I should just stay home and then maybe we can give Mitch a break. But we knew that was against what the best research out there was. He needs more socialization, not less. And so we would be like, we've got to keep him in these social situations because he won't grow. And so that was kind of an turmoil, you know, between probably with me as a professional and wanting something for Mitch. And then knowing too, Jason would balance that out and say, but is that what's best for Mitch? Is that what's best for our family? So I think that was really hard. And then we just didn't want to take away from each other. You know, we want Mitch to feel loved and valued. We want you to feel loved and valued. We want Tori to feel loved and valued. You all have strengths and characteristics that are, you know, only blessings to us, and we don't want to miss out. So it's just that balance.
There's one thing I wanted to point out there, which was, and I relate this to the metaphor, like how you boil a frog. And I felt like I was boiled my whole life just because, I know, I really couldn't see. I was just so like, I was inside. I was inside the box. So I couldn't see outside the box of what it was like to be in a situation where there were so many challenges, so many, you know, things where our hardships were just around just about every corner. But what I really learned from you guys, and what I hope that everyone can take away from here, is that there's a version of the story to any hardship, where there's a version of that story where you could be happy within it. You could be happy through, you know, having a kid with autism, raising them, being in really terrible situations, what could be seen as terrible. But there's a version of that story where you can be happy and love your life throughout it. I really just want that to be a huge takeaway here, just because, you know, I don't know if there's a more jarring experience than hearing that your kid has a disability. So I wanted to point that out. And if you're looking for a real life outcome that you can tie that to, you know, that they live within this room and then Tori's upstairs. But, you know, I just wanted to really point that out.
Yeah.
All right. So two more things. Did you ever think that Mitch would get to where he is now?
I did.
Wow.
Yeah. Especially when he was in high school and we could see more, bigger growth, I guess, bigger steps. And the fact that he was starting to change. He was willing to change. He was willing to try football. Yeah. And his reasoning behind football, it wasn't just football, but he loved us. He wanted us to share the same stories. And somebody that thinks independent thinks that way. And that's where I was like, you're starting to see this young man grow into a man, and that he can stand on his own two feet. So, I had faith that it was going to happen.
Yeah.
I had faith too. I think that's the thing hope is a big motivator hope is a light, I think, for our family. We're just going to keep dreaming. We're going to keep hoping. We're going to keep believing in each other. And I think we always wanted Mitch to be able to live on his own, to have a job, to have friends, to communicate, to love and to feel. And I think we wanted other people too to know that they played a part in his story. And we are so grateful to so many people. We're grateful to you and Tori. I'm grateful to Mitch for making me a better mom and a better educator. And so he's just
changed our whole world, and it might have been devastating to hear that diagnosis, but it's only brought about the best parts of our life. So.
Yeah. So an autistic story is a beautiful story if you let it. Mm-hmm. And what you brought value-wise is beyond measure. Because it's what, it far exceeded what I had for you when you were born. You think this is what you want for your boy, but then you go through the struggles, and then you see you push through those barriers. There's nothing better.
Yeah.
Then you've let me look at the world completely different.
No, thank you guys. You definitely helped me on my journey. You, Mom, Vince, Tori, people that you helped gave me access to that. Yeah. You gave me every chance to succeed, and you taught me with love. You gave me faith. You gave me hope that you still believed in me. And that definitely always carries through. And just letting you know that this is having autism, it's not, you can let this be your identity or your crutch or your label, but it doesn't define you as you. You're still a person that can do great and amazing things.
Yeah. And you were a role model within our family.
Oh.
Because, you know, we wanted the same thing for you, Vince, and for Tori. And you got to see him blossom.
Yeah.
Before you, I thank God that he was first. He probably doesn't like that because of the discipline.
I was the test child, so yeah. I'll give some credit that I had a brother. I was well enough that Vince and Tori were born. So
yeah, but I think what you went through helped your brother and sister be more empathetic.
Yeah, they're just amazing people.
Well, and these guys give people grace.
Oh, gosh.
That's what I love about you.
Just amazing, amazing people, amazing parents.
Good family.
Yeah.
We're blessed.
All right, let's wrap this thing up. All right. We got to get out of here.
We got to make some Kleenex around here.
All right. Thank you guys so much for being my parents and Mitch's parents and Tori's parents and coming on the podcast. If anyone wants to reach out to you guys, just come through the Autism Podcast. I'll make sure that, you know, those questions asked, I think it'd be super valuable. So if you're looking for, you know, a story you can relate to or just a familiar face, I'll make sure you guys get connected with them. Mitch, anything else to add? Also, you know what? I had this joke I had teed up, but I really wanted to mention it. You know, when we were talking about like hope and, you know, do you ever think Mitch would get to where he was? My joke was, well, I did until Mitch kept shoving peanut butter and jelly sandwiches into VCRs. And then, you know, I had a little thing. I just really wanted that joke to be heard. Okay, now you can wrap it up.
Okay. Well, please feel free to just give us any questions we can, stuff you want to hear on the podcast, things we could mention. Definitely mention that through the website. And stay positive, stay happy, and know that you're not alone in this struggle. There are people out there that are willing to lend you a hand, and know that every child, regardless of situation, regardless of any circumstance that's been placed before you, that child is yours, and they are to be loved, and show that love, and that love will shine through them brighter than you can possibly imagine. So thank you again for listening to this podcast, and we'll catch you on another day.
All right.
Catch you later.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks.